Trump administration revived the U.S.
There are many distractions out there, and we are told they are all extremely important. No wonder we sometimes struggle to focus on what is actually relevant to us. Now, what if we could sort through those issues and eliminate the ones that have less impact on us? Clarity. The peace of mind we owe ourselves. That is the reason we created Current Relevance. Over the next 20 minutes, we will delve into the people, sources, and places of an issue. Then we'll wrap up giving our opinion on how it may or may not be worth your time.
Thanks, Colonel, for that awesome intro. I couldn't write it better myself. By the way, is it your mom or your dad who you thank each day for the reason your voice is so velvety smooth?
I have no idea.
Well, either way, thank them for me also, okay? I'm gonna have to have a long chat with the powers that be about getting you a raise.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jerry, and thank you for joining us here at Current Relevance. A show, as the Colonel stated earlier, is all about bringing you a single hot topic each week and picking it apart in the effort to work out if it's really something you need to concern yourself with. So let's get straight into it. This week's topic is BCI. What does BCI stand for? Well, it stands for Brain Computer Interface, also known as HMI or Human Machine Interface, but don't let the technical terms confuse you. We all deal with BCI every day. And I'm not just talking about our phones. Our keyboards, remote controls, and also those lovely little quartered soldiers we willingly allow into our homes that have cute little names like Siri, Alexa, Watson, and Bixby. They are all BCI devices. And we have all become accustomed to these amazingly convenient items. And rarely do we stop to wonder, or remember if you're old enough, what it was like just over a dozen years ago before things started to advance at such an incredible pace. Well, I'm taking us back a few extra decades before then, just for a brief moment, to acknowledge our human brilliance when it came to creating these devices that allowed us to speak with machines. Since the typewriter far preceded the computer for ways to communicate, it's not difficult to understand why the keyboard was established as the initial way for us to interact. As the years passed and computers started to become small enough in size to allow you to have one in the home, it wasn't long before the computer needed to be more versatile. The introduction of video games was an instant success, and with its conception, we needed new ways to interact. Some of the first types of gaming controllers had just a four-way axis stick and a single button, but it was sufficient for us to do things with our computer we were never able to do before. Since then, those gaming console controllers have anywhere between 10 and 20 buttons, two 360-degree axis sticks, a four-way axis pad, and even a split axis function within the framework that does what I have no idea, but it's there. And so are lights, LED displays, and even a motor inside to create a more real feel to the games by slightly vibrating the casing. Now that we're heading into the VR gaming world, those controllers are adapting even more. No longer are both your hands placed on a single controller. Now you have even more functionality as the very placement in space the controller is positioned as it's attached to your hand, and the physical movement of your hands now control things in the game. And yes, the multitude of buttons listed before are still there. The point I'm trying to make here is that we develop these things as we need them, when things advance. And with technology developing so rapidly, we're finding our old ways of communicating are causing too great a delay in getting that information to our machines. Now, I'm going to play a brief clip for you. The gentleman speaking is Elon Musk, you know, the founder of SpaceX and the Boring Company. He really should have named that something else, but whatever, he's the billionaire. He is also the founder of Tesla, OpenAI, and for this episode's relevance, a company named Neuralink. Neuralink is a neurotechnology company focused on developing brain-computer interfaces and their abilities.
Over time, I think we will probably see a closer merger of biological intelligence and digital intelligence. And it's mostly about the speed of the connection between your brain and the digital extension of yourself, particularly output. output, if anything, is getting worse. We used to have like keyboards that we'd use a lot. Now we do most of our input through our thumbs on a phone. That's just very slow. A computer can communicate at a trillion bits per second, but your thumb can maybe do, I don't know, 10 bits per second or 100 if you're being generous. So some high bandwidth interface to the brain, I think, will be something that helps achieve a symbiosis and between human and machine intelligence.
Wait a second. What? You mind saying that again, Speedy? A little slower this time?
Some high bandwidth interface to the brain.
Well, to keep it short, and trust me, he's serious. Neuralink is currently working on a machine they call the sewing machine. It will literally implant these little nodes onto your scalp and into your scalp to be as close to the synapses as possible without actually entering your head. Elon has also mentioned using the already established highway to those neurotransmitters. In other words, he intends to use your fine and delicate blood vessels. Their goal here is to be able to receive and feed off the neurons as they leap between those nodes. Now, I know it sounds sort of sci-fi and not possible, but they are already doing it with success. Also, they're not alone. After the break, I'll tell you about another company that's walking down a very similar path, and it's also unbelievably breathtaking. Stay tuned. It is our goal to take a few minutes each week and go over some of the questions and responses we get as the months go on. However, because this is our first episode, and since we've literally launched this show without any lead-up, our social sites are quite bare of your communications. For now, I'll just let you know my personal goals for this show, and next week after you take a few minutes to subscribe, and leave some feedback, of course, on Facebook and Twitter, I might be responding to your comments and questions. So, from my perspective, the world has shrunk a lot over the past 25 years. With the growing public use of the internet, email and smart devices have us speaking to other nations instantly, including real-time language translations. So wherever we are, and whenever we are, we can be in the constant communication. This is such a powerful thing, and it's so commonplace that we don't even give it a second thought. But when we do, we begin to realize that a downside is we can also instantly receive information that is tough to deal with. Take, for instance, just over a week ago at the time of this recording, the world just lost an icon. There was an accident, and we lost 9 great people, one of which was the NBA superstar Kobe Bryant. It was around noon on Sunday that I was relaxing at home with the family and on the PC when the tweets started spamming the world. The reason I bring this up is this is just one of the hundreds of emotionally laden bits of information that gets into our minds, and I believe it takes a toll on us. No differently than it used to 25 years ago, a time when there was far less news bombarding us every day. Sure, we might deal with it better now than we did then, but is it really dealing with it? Or are we desensitizing it and storing it like data? Either way, it's there, and now it's part of us. I firmly believe that while there are extremely important issues that we all need to pay attention to, and they do vary between each of us, it's the mass delivery of all the important issues that tears away at our ability to focus on what is important to each of us. So my goal is to put to you some of those issues without bias or spin so that you can decide for yourself what is and is not relevant. Now I admit, nearing the end of each show, I will tell you my personal connection to each issue, but by no way am I some sort of professional. So take it with a grain of salt and do your own due diligence to sort out your own conclusions. You owe it to yourself to reach mental clarity. And who knows, maybe you will even agree with this old guy. As for who I am, well, the easiest way to explain myself is I am the absolute embodiment of the saying, jack of all trades, master of none kind of guy. There are very few things that I cannot do, but while that is the non-bragging truth, the difficult factor to admit is that I am not spectacular at any one thing. There are about 20 things I do extremely well, hundreds of things that I can do well above par, then virtually almost everything else I can get done, though I might procrastinate a bit. But anyway, there are some things that I can't do, unless I'm forced to. But I believe it has to do with my phobias, such as obvious fear of heights. I'm not a friend of ladders or the work that requires the use of them. I passionately prefer not to go out on glass-floored observation decks that are common tourist attractions. I have a slight claustrophobia issue. Not that a closet would bother me, but elect me to be the one to go into that drainage pipe like that android on Aliens and, well, I think I'd rather French kiss the Hive Queen. Also, I have an odd fear of being out on rough water. So I would be fine on a lake where I can see the shores, but if I were adrift at sea during rough weather, I think I'd rather be below deck drinking heavily anything that would obscure the reality of my situation. I think it must be that fear of severe injury or death thing, I don't know. Anyway, thanks for listening, but enough about me. Let's get back into the show. Thank you all for sticking with me as I delve into the futuristic-seeming world of neurotechnology. It never ceases to amaze me at all the things that I learn while researching these issues. So I hope that something I bring up sparks an interest in you, so that you'll take it one step further and decide for yourself what is important to you. Is what I'm talking about relevant? That's what the show's all about. One of the interesting nuggets of information I learned when looking into this BCI world was the science and medical advancement behind the technology being worked with BCI. There's a multifaceted R&D company called Battelle that is just tearing it up in the BCI advancement world. One of their efforts is establishing a mobilization to paralyzed limbs. I encourage you to give them an in-depth look, as their accomplishments are simply breathtaking. With their NeuroLife program, not to be confused at all with Elon's NeuroLink, Battelle are collecting signals from the brain, bypassing the damaged spinal column and sending them to the affected limb, much like the 7 a.m. traffic would be rerouted to bypass road closures. Now stop just listening for a moment and visualize that. If you're not someone currently dealing with paralyzation, please put yourself in the patient's shoes just for a moment. Let's visualize that you're out celebrating some event with your friends and family, and everything was normal for you. Then, after the event, you're in your car, you're on the way home, and you're waiting at a red light, when suddenly you see a speeding car swerve out of control, then everything goes black. Days later, you wake up in the hospital, all your loved ones are around you. After failing to sit up and ask what happened, the doctors begin to inform you that an impaired driver just struck your car a few days earlier. And after numerous hours of surgery, your life was saved. Unfortunately, you're paralyzed from the waist down. Everything just changed for you at that instant. Forever. Let that thought settle in a moment. Now, think about how you would feel a few years later to learn of a device that would allow you to walk again with your own legs. Think of what that would mean to you. There are solvers out there right now, making this dream a reality. Coming out of that thought, let me tell you that in addition to that type of research, there are several other companies delivering data on the restorative properties of BCI therapy for people who have debilitating issues. One in particular is for people who have suffered a stroke. Doctors have discovered that patients using BCI devices are showing measurable changes in brain advancement after only an hour of use of their BCI device. The doctors are saying that the patients are showing the advancement equivalent to weeks of physical training after only staring at a computer screen while wearing the device. That is amazing to me. So these companies are showing the ability not only to bypass the spinal column, but stimulating and maybe even repairing the damaged areas of the brain itself. If it's not repairing, it's causing the body to heal itself or regrow. It's doing something, clearly. Measurable changes. It's just remarkable. So now let me briefly tell you about the other side of this technology. Because simply, everything that can be done for the development of good will also be done by someone for the advancement of their own purposes. Whether it's good or bad, it's uncontrolled. BCI is not limited to the injured. Think for the moment of a perfectly normal person who, while being equipped with a BCI device, it advances their own synapses so that they respond faster to a situation. Keep in mind, these devices are able to transmit as well as receive, so at the speed of light, information is delivered to your brain on how to deal with the situation. Not like an instruction manual, just the exact reaction, or realization, needed to gain the advantage. Those microfacial expressions you may not notice, but a computer would never miss, that would allow you to spot someone telling truth or lies in real time. Having that information would change conversations 100%. Take it one step further. Since everything bouncing around inside your head right now is energy, and these devices are recording how to interpret what those neurons mean, that shows us that we're realistically on the fringe of having computers accurately read our minds. Imagine that for a moment, just in the privacy area of your life. 30 years from now, a governmental agent may legally be able to place a hat on your head just for a few seconds and upload your thoughts and memories. Now they're saying it's so they can get a better angle on a person you saw only one time and never interacted with. They just wanted to know a direction that person went, or what type of vehicle they left the scene in. It's a logical conclusion, since if you didn't know, let me enlighten you to a fact already known. Our eyes and ears record everything we see and hear. It's bringing those memories back. If we aren't paying enough attention to, in other words, we're not trying to remember something, doesn't mean it's not in there. You just don't have a way to recall it. But it's there. And it gets stored permanently. It's not short-term stuff. Now, to a governing agency, that would mean every one of us would become the equivalent of a mobile CCTV camera. The scary thought here is, how did they isolate just that information? Or did they just learn every password you have ever had? Maybe they just learned about something you said to someone 2 days ago that was totally business related. However, that person you said it to was deeply affected and quit his job. He went home and started drinking heavily and then decided to go out for a drive. Under his impairment, he lost control of his car and slammed into another at an intersection, paralyzing that driver. Right now, there's no law linking the duty of care in such a situation to you. But this technology hasn't been developed yet. We're thankfully still in the infant development stages of BCI, which brings us to the final segment of our show. Here's where I will deliver my personal reasoning of the topic each week. This is where I remind you that I am not a professional and not to take what I say as complete fact. This is my opinion, and again, I encourage you each to seek out your own. Now, I need to be completely blunt with you. The thought of someone reading my mind without my control freaks the hell out of me. In direct contrast, the thought of people permanently afflicted with a disability being able to once again regain that ability makes me want to cry with joy and hug everyone involved. Yet I know we can't have one without the potential for the other. Having done my research in preparation for the show, I have thought a lot about its relevance to me. And I think it's far more beneficial and needed than otherwise. Either way, while I am ecstatic to know this technology is being developed, I also know that all involved agree this will be a long process, and it will take decades of advance for it to be to the level of open public involvement. Therefore, I would put this topic on the back burner. For those of you that don't cook, that means to not forget about it because it's still cooking and to give it a good stir periodically. Putting too much attention on the best and worst possible scenarios at this point will just leave you frazzled, so I plan to just check on the development a few times a year. I'm sure I'll refer back to this technology in other episodes because it's pivotal and groundbreaking research with unlimited potential. So don't lose sight of it, and I promise to update you from time to time, so don't fret. Well, I want to thank you for staying with me on my 20-minute rant into the neurotechnology field of brain-computer interface. I hope you have found the topic interesting and have a better understanding of what's possible. Make sure you subscribe to Current Relevance so you are alerted when the next show is available. While my goal is to get the show up on all the podcast servers each week by Tuesday night, life is still life and I'm sure it will interfere with my endeavors from time to time, so I apologize in advance. But until then, see you next week. Keep well, alert, and informed, my friends. And thank you for your support. This is Jerry Lane, signing off. Oh, and before I go, I wanted to inform any of you that have always wanted to make a podcast, but thought it was too difficult. Have you heard about Anchor? It's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First of all, it's free. I mean, if you're worried about the initial setup cost, Anchor takes care of the majority of the stuff for you. All you need is the hardware. In its design, Anchor has creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will even distribute your podcast for you. And not just to some obscure podcast downloading site. It'll be available for your listeners at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher,
Overcast, CastBox, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, and Pocket Casts.
So consider your audience very well supplied. If you're hoping to make money from your podcast, Anchor gets you started by bringing the advertisers to you. And they do it with no minimum listenership. Anchor is simply everything you need to make a podcast, and it's all in one place. So give it a go. I did. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.